Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show. Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. And before we get started today, just want to make a quick announcement that May is actually our Heritage Radio Network membership drive. So it's definitely something that is absolutely worth doing. Before I was a host on this network, I was a member. And you can sign up at heritageradionetwork.org. Click the donate button, and then there are different levels of membership, but at all levels, you will get a membership card, which entitles you to a ton of great discounts, information on events, and the good feeling of knowing you're supporting what I think is a pretty great radio station. So thanks so much for that. And without further ado, we have today on the show someone I very much look up to in the industry, a veteran, a true professional. It's Olivier Floss. He's the wine and beverage director for the Marc Restaurant Group here in the United States. They actually also have four great restaurants over in the UK. But the restaurants here in the US, we have the two Avoce restaurants, both at Columbus Circle and then down by Madison Square Park. And then Morello Bistro in Greenwich, Connecticut, and Bistro du Midi in Boston, Massachusetts. So, Olivier, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you to invite me. Thank you.
And I should also say, congratulations. Last year, you were one of four restaurants in the United States, the only restaurant in the U.S. to win the Grand Award from Wine Spectator. That's a huge accomplishment. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. It has been almost 10 years working hard to get it, and finally light came from I don't know where, but we got it, and extremely proud for this accomplishment and for all the customers coming to the restaurant to see amazing and very balanced winist.
And what do you think were the factors that got you to that point? I mean, obviously the partners in the restaurant had to say, wow, we are going to make this decision to have an enormous amount of inventory. That has to be a challenging thing to convince anyone to do. How did that kind of all come about?
When we opened Time Warner about 3.5 years ago, the project for the beverage was, number one project was to try to get the Grand Award, because I'm sure you know many people try for 10 to 15 to 20 years to try to get it, and unfortunately they don't get select. So it was kind of a risk to get a huge inventory, but as well, it was something exciting on the other hand. And we decided to really balance our wine list, not only with the top winery with the best vintages, but what I think is extremely important is to have the percentage of your wine under $90, a very high level. And that is was for me the focus. Wine is for everybody, and you don't have to spend $200 to get a very good bottle of wine, or you don't have to spend $15 to have a nice glass of wine. So we have been selected very carefully, of course with quality, but about the price range as well.
Now, with 250 bottle wine lists like we have at our restaurants, I find sometimes there are bottles that just don't move nearly as well as I'd like to. You know, I do inventory month after month and count those same bottles over and over again. With an enormous wine list, how many selections are there, by the way?
We do have 2,800 selections.
2,800 selections. I mean, there have to be some wines that just simply don't move, and then especially at those kind of under $90 price point wines, you know, if those don't move, then they're not maybe necessarily getting too much better year to year. How do you kind of handle with controlling inventory and making sure that you have a nice rotation?
I do have the chance to have an incredible team behind me, and we're doing quite a lot of weekly meeting, and we always, first thing that we're looking at the inventory. I always said that a wine list is not a museum. Okay, there is some wines they have to move, very, very important. So when we do have some wine from a specific area and very kind of unusual grape that people are not aware and not exciting to order, so it has to be from us to go to the guest and saying, listen, I do have a very good wine from Piemonte, from Sicily, from Sardinia, some areas that they are maybe not aware. So it has to be definitely an approach from us to them.
Yep. And then how do you go about training your team of sommeliers to deal with such a huge list with 2,800 selections? I mean, obviously no one can know every single one of them. What's your approach
wine list, as you said, 2,800 selection, is already 60% of Italian wine and 20% French wine and 20%, of course, American wine. So basically, there is 20 region in Italy, some very weird grape, but that is part of the training and is part as well of a sommelier job, to trying to move your mind to a different set. Is not only one from Piemonte and Tuscany. If you want to talk about wine from Veneto or from Aglianico grape, kind of strange grape, but you know, it's very important to be aware of this type of thing. So we're doing quite a lot of testing, almost daily, but the very big meeting is weekly.
Okay, and you're doing daily tasting with the service staff or daily tasting with your team of sommeliers?
Every single night during pre-shift, we're testing one different wine or one different cocktail. Unfortunately, we cannot test more than that because, as we said, it's a testing. But I believe it's enough. And it's not only to get a training at the restaurant, what is important. In our business, you must love what you're doing. So you have to go a little bit behind the training that you get from the restaurant and find with internet or buy book and train to be, more knowledgeable about wine.
You're right. So not only would it be you're training people and they can do a better job, but that should also kind of be like a perk, right? A perk to working in a great restaurant like Avoce is that you're going to get to taste a wine every day at pre-shift and with the team of sommeliers or hopefully with you as well, and learn quite a bit about that. And so the people who have that passion look at that as a perk.
There is one thing that I want to say about that. I always said sharing is caring, okay? And that is one of them about testing. Every single night, we are very fortunate to open unbelievable bottle of wine. And sommelier, as his duty, is to test the wine before we pour that to the customer. We always, whatever we pouring, it has to be for all the sommelier team. Okay, I'm not saying that we're pouring a full glass, but we have just to smell and test a little bit enough to everybody can have a test. So if we're selling, as an example, I received a report last night, almost 10 incredible wine, okay, you have physically the test every single night of different wine. So some of them are more focus of testing Burgundy wine, so they're going to orient their sale a little bit according to, of course, number one, what the guests want, but second thing, about what they would like to test as well.
Yeah, I agree with you that this idea of sharing is caring. I think one of the saddest scenes I've ever seen in any movie was in Sideways, where he takes the bottle of 61 Cheval Blanc and drinks it by himself in a styrofoam cup. Like, that is so sad to me.
He was. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But you know, at least he was drinking that, yeah. Better than drinking a soda.
That, I guess that's true. But to share that with, you know, with one other person would be incredible, and even three other people, even though you get less of it, I think to share that joy and to feed off of everyone's enthusiasm for it makes it an even better experience.
It doesn't matter the quality of wine that you're testing. For me, is where you're sharing with this wine, and that is extremely important. So even if you don't have any knowledge about wine, what is important is sharing a good time, hopefully with wine, but that is what, for me, extremely important.
Now, I can tell by your accent that you're from New Jersey. So
Brooklyn.
Oh. how did, no, I know from that you're actually born in Marseille, France, but how did you get into wine? What were some of your earliest memories? I just have this idea of little French kids, you know, drinking a little bit of wine at the table. Did that happen for you?
It happened to me. I do have a very clear memory of that. I was between 11 to 12 years old, and every Sunday we were having dinner with all the family. And my grandfather used to have amazing wine cellar underground. And for me, the dream of the day was going with him downstairs and pick up the wine for the day. And he was talking to me about this grape region in France. And I was not paying too much attention. But what I do remember, it was the smell of this wine cellar. And I do remember as well, before everybody was coming, when he was opening the wine to be on a good temperature, it was not really sophisticated wine, okay? But again, he was sharing this, for him, best wine in the world, okay, with his family. And he's incredible. I was testing with him, I do remember, I was testing wine just a little bit, but enough to remember it.
At 11 and 12 years old.
Yes, why not? Why not? It's a good education. It's testing, not drinking. And I do believe, I do have two kids, and I do believe my kids do not drink, do not test any wine, but they smell each individual of wine that I'm opening at home. And that is starting early to understand what is about the wine, the history, geography, and is a lifestyle as well. Sometimes we think too much about negativity. Yes, is alcohol. Yeah, of course. But what is behind that? And starting early for education is important.
Yeah. And then, what was your first experience in a restaurant as a working in restaurants?
It's kind of funny. I was 14 years old, and I was not doing very good on school. And my parents, for punishment, decide for July and August, instead of to spend time with my friend on the beach, decide to put me on a restaurant business and to work extremely hard. And they let me for 2 months in this restaurant over there. And after 2 months, they came back and they say, "Oh, you learned something." I say, "Oh yeah, I learned something. I want to work in a restaurant business." So for them, they were really like, you know, they didn't understand too much why do you like it? Is really something very difficult. I said, yes, it is difficult, but I do have contact with people, and that is really what I like. And that was really, for me, the beginning of almost 25 years now.
And what would they let a 14-year-old do in the restaurant?
Is very simple. I was cleaning at the morning vegetables. After, I was cleaning the kitchen floor. For lunch, I was making sandwiches. During afternoon, refill the bar with soda and wine. And at night, I was making coffee. And I was not paid.
And you weren't paid?
I was not paid. No, I was not paid. Because that was a punishment. But I love it. I was not missing water. I was not missing food. I was sleeping at night, and I had a very good time. I had a really, really good time.
And you knew from that point. So did you go back next summer, or what happened?
No. The year after, I had the chance to get inside of the Lycée Hôtelier, is a school for become chef or waiter, and I did that for 2 years. And lucky enough, one of my stage that I did in one of the restaurants, it was in a very well-known restaurant, Le Petit Nice, 3-star Michelin, with an unbelievable wine cellar. And at this time, the assistant sommelier broke his legs, and it was during the high season. So no other things to do is to help the sommelier, because the guy was not paid. So I was helping him for quite a long time, and the guy never came back. So they asked me, would you like to carry on? I said, yes, I would like to, but could you send me to the sommelier school as well? So we make like a special deal. They send me to the school, and I work for them for a year, and lucky enough to be with one of the best sommeliers in France at this time, and that everything started at this time.
Wow.
After I went to Bordeaux for 7 years. Mm-hmm. I went to the University of Wine in Talence, where I met maybe one of the best winemakers in the world. And after I came back to south of
France.
Wait,
who is this one of the best wine? You can't just throw that without saying who
it is. I had the chance to meet people from Chateau Yquem, mm-hmm. from Petrus, from Lafitte, Latour. But the main guy who really changed my mind and make me really focus on wine was Mr. Ribeiro-Gaillon. Unfortunately, passed away now, but he was really the gentleman mm-hmm. who has a wine philosophy. And
did you find that Burgundy and those wines were the first that you were really drawn to?
But I was in Bordeaux at this time, so narrow-minded French people over there was drinking mostly only Bordeaux. So I have to move to Burgundy to starting to test Burgundy. And after I moved to London, and that is where I really have the opportunity to test wine from everywhere in the world. So that,
okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. I want to hear about what was going on when you were in London just after this short break.
This song is called Melted Magic by Obesity on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
And we're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here with Olivier Floss, and we were about to talk about some of Olivier's experiences in London, but during the break, I was just commenting to Olivier how cool I thought that story was about how we got the opportunity to work when the sommelier broke his legs at Le Poutinis, a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. But what I didn't realize when he was telling me was that during that year where they asked him to work for work in that guy's place, it was actually an entire year working for free. It was a stage for a whole year, 14-hour days, you're telling me.
I was working 6 days a week, an average of 14 hours a day. And the stage, yes, no money at all, zero. I was lucky enough that I was staying to my parents' house and spending a lot of time at the restaurant. Yes.
Okay, and so then when you came up with this idea that they should send you to school, a school I imagine was somewhat costly, and so you're like, well, at least pay me by sending me to the school, and they agreed to that.
But in fact, because I left school when I was 14, French system couldn't allow me to go back to school because I left at 14, and the director of the school was not at all happy with that, because you know you cannot be very good in school, but it doesn't mean you are a good bad person. And a perfect example with me, and I'm sure with millions of other people. So he said, let's go to take an example of something who didn't go well in school, but can do something else outside of study, mathematics, and languages, whatever it was. So they put me back in the sommelier school, and he asked me, you have to finish number one, because you will be an example for the rest of the people. And I worked very, very hard. I was doing service, and between my break, when I had a break, I was taking my book and reading. So it was completely a non-stop. The other 11 students, they were already in a high-end school, so they were studying all day long. They were not working at the restaurant. I was the only one. And finally, after 1 year, it was an exam, and I finished number one. To thank the president of the school, I went back to his restaurant, 3-star Michelin, and I said, I want to pay my due. I want to still work with you for 1 year. You don't have to pay me. But at the end of the year, I want you to send me whatever I want. And he said, okay, it's a done deal. So I finished my year with him, and he sent me in Bordeaux, it's the capital of the world for wine, and especially for young sommelier. And I do remember when I turned 18 years old, I was driving my Fiat Panda 1000 CL. And when everybody was making party, when you are 18, is kind of big deal. I drove from Marseille to Bordeaux. It was a 15-hour drive. And at night, I worked over there my first shift.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And that was the beginning of a long story, 7 years in Bordeaux. And they sent me to the University of Wine, where I got the DUAD. DUAD is the most prestigious diploma for wine tasting. We were 500 people, and they get only 10. So
you go from 14-year-old high school dropout to the most prestigious diploma, number one in your class.
It was incredible. And I'm, hopefully my son and my daughter doesn't listen to that, because I'm pushing them to go as high as they can in a school system. But it doesn't matter. It's not because you are not good in school that you are completely bad in your life. And unfortunately, the system that we do have sometimes is kind of like that. But I've been lucky. I work very hard as well. But to success, you must have a big part of chance. And I met Daniel here. Mm-hmm. When I arrived in 1999, and Daniel has been for me an incredible example of a French guy coming here and getting a success as he has been doing.
He did pretty well.
Pretty good, yes.
I've heard criticism from a lot of chefs that a lot of the people that they get and that they see now, this new wave, maybe don't have the kind of work ethic that maybe they were used to in the past. I'm sure that you've You've did everything that you've done by your extraordinary, as you've shown, extraordinary work ethic. Are you finding that the new breed of sommeliers, the people who are coming to you, who you're interviewing, share that kind of desire?
Not really. I agree with you. Many of young sommeliers want to become a wine director before to be an assistant sommelier. And everything takes time to become somebody who can take good decision, experience. Nothing can happen on one night. And not only that really not make me very happy or that is right away they're talking about money. And that is something that really like shocked me. I never talk about money almost until I came here. Mm-hmm. And they right away want to be the best guy, want to buy. They don't want to have this contact with the customer. But if you don't please your customer, people going to come back to your restaurant. And it's not like it used to be 20 years ago or 25 years ago. You were going to a restaurant because the food was very good, but you are not thinking too much about the service. Now you can go to a restaurant. It doesn't have to be amazing food if the food is good at a good price, but you have an incredible service. People come back, and that is very important to put this quality in their mind and let them understand it, that they are the number one PR of the restaurant is the front of the house. And yes, they want to go a little bit too fast sometimes.
And I've heard that from a lot of friends who have moved out of the city, who've gotten used to a level of service that you see in New York City. And obviously, it's not everywhere in New York. But, you know, I think that service is what defines a good restaurant from a great restaurant and what does bring people back. And I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Service is not something that you're doing just for 2 hours and get your paycheck. It's something that you do have inside. You have to be somebody that is very happy about yourself first to make people happy.
Yeah.
If you're coming and you have a big issue in your life and you're starting to take order, you're not going to be polite, you're not going to smile. And I'm trying to explain all of them. You welcome your people in your house. Okay, mm-hmm. Your restaurant is your house. Are you welcoming people with a sad face? No, you welcome them with a happy face. And it's difficult to explain that to them.
You have to have that in you.
Yes,
that inside
yes,
of you.
Yes.
So tell me, because I think it's interesting that you that you're in charge of 4 different programs in quite different areas, right? In one in Columbus Circle, one by Madison Square Park, one in Greenwich, Morello, and Bistro Midi in Boston. 4 kind of very different areas. How do you cater the wine list to the clientele in those areas?
I always said that a wine list is according to what the guest would like to have. It's not according to your own taste. So it's a very good point. An example, Boston is a French bistro, okay? So when I had the chance to have my sommelier Todd over there, I said, Todd, what do you think about Boston? I'm not from Boston, I'm from New York. So you know better than me the market. And he gave me a lot of information, and according to that, we build up a wine list that has been a successful wine list and please a lot of people. You cannot do everything by yourself. As I said before, is a team effort, and I do have different sommeliers in each and every restaurant who give me some information that are useful for the benefit of the restaurant and the wine list, and more important, to please the customer.
Yeah. And so, do you have each of them buying? Do you have someone who kind of buys, and you set a list for them what they can buy? How does that work?
As I said before, we have a weekly meeting. Mm-hmm. We're looking at our PO every single week. We discuss about the need, and we decide together, and that's it.
Okay, so something that I've always wanted to ask you, because you have the Avoce restaurants that are predominantly Italian wines, you grew up in France, worked and studied in Bordeaux, came to the States, worked for Danielle. Why Italian? When did you fall in love with Italian wine?
I'm from Marseille, mm-hmm. okay? So it's not too far away from Italy. So I had the chance many times to visit Italy. And when I was in England, I was lucky enough to one of the sommeliers was an Italian guy, and he started to introduce me about Italian wine, and I really, really like it. An example, Piemonte for me is a really close picture of what is Burgundy. So I start to understand more Piemonte because with this link, or if you take the example of Tuscany, it's more close to Bordeaux style as well. And that is where I start to study Italian wine. And you know, when you love wine, there is not a frontier, there is not a barrier, there is no line. Like wine from Argentina, Chile, Italy, and US, amazing winery and incredible quality of wine.
I've been completely impressed by U.S. wines and never thought we'd ever have a California Chardonnay on any of our lists, ever, ever, ever. And now we're pouring one by the glass at L'Officio, and it's like completely blowing my mind. So
it's a smart move because you adapt yourself according to the need of the customer.
Yes.
So that is, you're doing very good.
But also the smart move of being just more open-minded. And I thought they actually did not think that the kind of wines that I liked in Tuscany and in anywhere in Europe even existed in California, and they do, and they're so great, and you have these beautiful coastal wines that are balanced and just wonderful.
I believe the positive thing that coming from Napa Valley is the change of their mind, okay? And because the change of their mind was from the change of the palate of their customer. Mm-hmm. Not anymore high-end alcohol contained in a Chardonnay or extremely oaky Chardonnay or full-body Cabernet. Now they are more focused on the finesse, elegance, and a better balance. And when you eat or drink this type of wine, you enjoy it better yourself, you enjoy better your company, and you know, you're not getting completely full after two glasses, and they make a huge difference, and the quality is there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Again, nothing to disagree with you. thank you so much for sharing your story. I think it's pretty remarkable. If anyone wants a job at Avoce, you should listen to Olivier to this, because and understand what working hard is really all about, and also showcasing hospitality and passion and professionalism. Thank you so much.
My pleasure to be here.
And just a reminder, go to heritageradionetwork.org and click that button, donate to be a member. All right, thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.